underwriting support for the Book Show podcast on WAMC.org comes from Northshire Bookstore, Manchester Center, Vermont, and Saratoga Springs, New York. An independent bookstore offering books, author events, gifts for children and adults, and more. Northshire.com. And from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a new Bachelor of Science degree in Public Health with a focus on social, physical, and behavioral sciences. strose.edu.
Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. Jonathan Safran Foer is the author of two best-selling award-winning novels, Everything is Illuminated and Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close, and a best-selling work of nonfiction, Eating Animals. His latest, a novel, is called Here I Am. The title comes from the Bible, the story where God calls on Abraham to sacrifice his son Isaac. The book is set in present-day Washington, D.C., where a Jewish family goes through a domestic crisis, while at the same time a geopolitical crisis unfolds on the other side of the world. It asks a question that many people wrestle with: how do we put our daily domestic problems in perspective when real problems all over the world cause death, starvation, and destruction? Again, the name of the new novel is Here I Am, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Jonathan Safran Foer to The Book Show this week. Thank you very much.
Hi.
Great pleasure to have you in the program.
Thank you.
Is it me, or this book seems, in comparison to your other work, much more intimate?
What do you mean by intimate?
I mean that there is...
I mean, whatever the case is, yes, it is you. Because, you know, different readers bring their own stuff.
Well, I'm obviously more curious about how you feel about it. And I ask the question because there is perhaps in looking at the other novels, something there, more of a crash and a bang. And here we are in bedrooms, we are in living rooms, we are in kitchens, we are in hallways. We are in very intimate spots where there are very intimate conversations going on.
I think that's true. I mean, that clearly is true. It's also, though, twice as long, you know, as my other books.
Yes.
It's has a greater span globally. It's a lot louder politically and probably culturally, more irreverent in those ways. So I think it may be both. It's more intimate in terms of staying with conversations. You know, my other novels had very strong voices behind them. This one is told almost entirely in the third person. But they didn't stay in conversations, really. They're mostly driven by individual sensibilities and ways of speaking and being in the world. And this one is more interrelational, whether it's a parent and child or husband and wife. And as you say, those conversations are in settings. You know, they're surrounded by four walls or sometimes even in cars. And so I think something about that sort of contracted setting and the length of time that we stay with the conversation, sometimes 20, 30 pages, maybe does create a kind of intimacy that the other books didn't have.
I've heard you refer to the book as a book full of arguments without an argument to make.
Well, people often ask me or say to me, well, you've written a very political book. And I will sort of return their thought to them and say, well, what do you think the politics of the book are? And usually what I get back is, well, it's not that the book has a politics, it just has a lot of politics. And I think the same could be said of argument. Almost every page has some kind of argument on it, whether it's a political argument or a sort of local argument between people about something, or a broader emotional or psychological argument. But there's no perspective that I was trying to advance with the book. It wasn't a case I was trying to make. I don't start books with a set of ideas that I want to somehow like encode into a fictional world and hope that the reader will decode. For me, it's just a very primary document. These are these people in this setting at this time, and this is how this little universe operates.
I like that term, primary document.
I always like the idea of a book being sort of like, not like a jigsaw puzzle that you find in the middle of a forest and try to put together, but like a rock that you find in the middle of the forest, something that's just complete unto itself. And, you know, one can make all kinds of interpretations about the rock. Like, looks like there's a little mark on it. I wonder where that came from. Or why is it the only big rock in this area? Or would it be fun to turn this rock into something else, like a kind of a ball to throw back and forth, or a weapon? But ultimately, the thing is whole unto itself. And I want my books to be like that.
So we are in a world in this book where things are falling apart. This family is falling apart. There is this global crisis that I mentioned. And there seems to be, in many cases, in a lot of the relationships, this distance forming. What was fascinating about that you wanted to explore?
I don't think there was anything before the fact that was fascinating to me. The fascination came through the writing.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know exactly why. It's hard. It's a hard question to answer. Why are you drawn to a certain kind of thing? I could make up answers, but I'm not sure they'd be truthful. If you were to ask someone who has a sort of fetishistic relationship to leather or fur,
mm-hmm.
why are you drawn to that? That would obviously be an impossible question to answer, or it could only be answered tautologically. Like, I'm drawn to it because I'm drawn to fur and leather. I think there are reasons why writers and readers are drawn to certain kinds of dynamics in books having to do with, maybe here's a better way to answer it. Like, why did you have the dream that you had last night?
Mm-hmm.
It's not for no reason, but it's also not deliberate. Like, you're not in control of the dreams that you have, but you had it because there was some kind of set of concerns that your brain was working out, even if you couldn't name them before, and even if you can't interpret the dream after. And books have that quality that, I can look at them and say, here's what seems to be going on. I can interpret it just like a dream. But like a dream, not exactly like a dream, but similar to a dream, it does have a quality of being unintended or not consciously intended.
So for you then, what are the themes that emerge?
Home is a big one.
Mm-hmm.
Where is home? How do you locate home? How can you locate it? Can you live there? What's the difference between homeland and home? House and a home? Can a home be a familial unit? Can a home be a career? Can you be at home in yourself? That to me is the sort of the biggest sort of presiding theme, but also questions of identity, of the choices that we make, the meaning of our language, how we use words in our lives and to what extent those words correspond to what we mean or what when pushed we would do.
That idea of language comes to me. There is a, because in reading it, there's this idea that you keep going back to, that words mean things, this meaning of words. There's a section in the book, this comes later in the novel. "Tell me," he said, "just tell me, why are you going to destroy this family? Don't you dare say that. But it's true, you're destroying our family." "I'm not, I'm ending our marriage." He couldn't believe what she had just dared to say. "Ending our marriage will destroy our family." "No, it won't." "Why? Why are you ending our marriage?" "Who have I been having all of these conversations with for the last 3 weeks? We were talking." She let that reverberate for a moment. Then she said, "That's why. Because we were talking? Because you're always talking, and your words never mean anything." Basically, this comes out, that's why, because we were talking. So that idea that it does seem to be words mean things, and we don't always know what they mean.
Well, I think in that conversation, what she's expressing is that she's lost faith in his words, He's saying, "Hey, we were just talking. It wasn't real. We were just having the conversation." In the same way that with his texts that revealed this kind of affair, he would say, "Hey, I was just talking. Nothing actually happened." And, going all the way back to the beginning of the book, when Sam, the eldest son, gets in trouble at Hebrew school for having written all of these bad words, mm-hmm. Sexually explicit, homophobic, racist, anti-Semitic, whatever. One could...
In Hebrew school.
In Hebrew school. One could say in his defense, he didn't actually do anything. You know, he didn't give them to anybody. He didn't direct them at anybody. He just wrote down some words. What's the big deal? They're just words. But, you know, in that case, it may be the case that they're just words, but that gets carried out through, it resonates into a couple of different situations in the book, including Jacob's affair and also including his relationship to Israel and his relationship to, you know, his identity inside of his family. Like, there are a lot of things that he says about himself, and for about 15 years he was able to convince himself and others that there wasn't any great or important distance between what he said about himself and who he was. And then these crises, the domestic crisis of the cell phone and the global crisis of the earthquake, create an awareness of the distance between his words and his self.
And we don't know actually what these words mean until they are challenged.
And we can't. Yeah. You know, the first reading I did for this book in Brooklyn was at a synagogue. And so, I don't know, a lot of the audience was Jewish. Not all of it, but a lot. And the interviewer, so in the book, there's an earthquake that precipitates a war, and then the prime minister of Israel asks all Jews between the ages of 15 and 55 to come fight for Israel's survival. So the interviewer at this reading asked the audience, how many of you would go in that situation? And some people raised their hands, and some people didn't, and most people were just looking at what everybody else was doing. But afterwards, the interviewer said to me, what do you think about that response? I said, I just don't think anything about it at all, because as in the book, it's just words. It's nothing. You know, until one is challenged, you really don't know who you are. You only know who you want to be or who you want to be known as. And that was why I felt that I needed this particular event, or an event like it, but I frankly couldn't think of any events like it. This event, the earthquake, the war, the prime minister asking Jews to come to fight, to reveal who these characters are. In the same way that the discovered cell phone finally reveals who this husband and wife are.
Jonathan Safran Foer is our guest on this week's book show. The name of the new novel is Here I Am. The book is published by FSG. I've also, and I find this interesting, that you say the book is not autobiographical, but you feel that it is the most personal book that you have written.
Well, I mean, it's not autobiographical. See, my therapist would ask why I had such a hard time pronouncing that word. It's not autobiographical in the sense of the events in the book corresponding to the events in life. That's usually what people mean when they say, ask if something's autobiographical.
Right.
There are other ways of thinking about it, like, is it true to your sensibility? Is it true to your perspective? Do you feel that, regardless of the distance between you and the characters, that somehow your voice is being expressed in the book? And I do feel that with this book. I don't feel closer to Jacob than I do characters in my other books, or for that matter, to his wife Julia or Sam or other characters in this book. But something about the sum of the book, the atmosphere, the culture of the book.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mean Jewish culture. I don't mean American culture. I mean the ways that the characters relate to each other and the kinds of ideas they have and their ways of expressing them. That felt close to me.
So you don't write about divorce because you have just gone through a divorce?
No, I actually did a lot of the that writing before I did, before it was even on the horizon. I don't think life was imitating art. I don't think art was imitating life. I think, you know, a huge number of books are written about relationships and about marriages. And obviously it would be disingenuous to say that there was no influence of my life on the book. There was, clearly there was, just not on the level of events or characters.
Looking at that just a little bit further, the book is, this comes 11 years since your last novel. Obviously, since then, you've written Eating Animals. You're also working on a television show for HBO, which I believe was called All Talk. You pulled the plug on that. Was that something that you were able to in some way take the work that you had done, which from my understanding was quite a bit of work, and rework that into this?
Some of it. Lots of it, no. the characters were quite different, but it was also a family with a similar dynamic. And there was and the most important thing that I carried over was the discovered cell phone. That was the sort of inciting event in the show, and a cell phone that reveals an affair. And I obviously it's one of the inciting events in the book. But as with divorce, it's not particularly original. I mean, that device has probably been used thousands and thousands of times. But it is one of the sort of points of contact between those two projects.
You pulled the plug late in that project. I would think that would be difficult.
In what sense do you mean difficult?
Meaning that you make a real commitment that I'm not going to do this. I am going to now... I assume the plan was then to write the novel, a novel.
Well, it was difficult because it was difficult for a lot of reasons. One is I was proud of the work.
Mm-hmm.
Two, I put a lot of time into it. Three, TV is just larger than literature. You know, it's a TV show that you've never heard of has a larger audience than a book on a bestseller list.
Right.
By a power of 10. TV has a much greater cultural impact right now than literature does. And it's a tricky thing to say, to choose something smaller. America does a lot to encourage a desire for moreness, bigness. And I think something about Jewish culture, the one that I was raised in, also looks highly upon more. So I found that hard.
Does it give you more of a commitment to say that there's a purity in your profession in that, okay, I am a writer? That you could go from author to being a runner, working on television, as opposed to then saying, okay, this is my body of work and it is literature.
I don't know what will happen in the future. You know, I assume I will just write novels. That's certainly my feeling right now for what I want to do. I don't think it would be any less pure if I had done the show, for example.
Mm-hmm.
It just wasn't for me. There was no kind of ethics behind it or no kind of aesthetics behind it. It just, in terms of my life and how I wanted to spend my days and what my days would look like, it wasn't for me. I like the freedom in all senses of writing mm-hmm. novels. I control my time. I control all of my ideas. There is no committee. There are no lawyers. There's no actors. There's nothing. It's just me. And
so, not to argue,
yeah.
But that seems like a purity.
No, I mean that, you know, a classical composer composes for an orchestra mm-hmm. and has a conductor to contend with, and there's a purity, you could say, in the piece of music, just as there was a purity in the writing. But once it opens up into the larger process, it involves compromise or interpretation. I don't know if that makes it less pure when a piece mm-hmm. of music is performed, if it was written to be performed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, playwriting is pure. You know, I think there's a temptation to sort of... there are things about TV or the culture of TV that might feel problematic, but they're not artistically problematic. They can be culturally problematic.
And looking back at the novel, we talked about this idea that there's very much a look at things that are falling apart. But you also, it's also very much about mending, too, right? About putting things back together, even if that means a conclusion, an end.
I think so. It's about people trying to put things together. One thing, in the moment, in a time that we are with these characters, they are seeking. They weren't always. They were complacent for a lot of years, which is why they find themselves in this position, or part of why they do. But certainly for the 5 or 6 weeks that we're with them in the book, they're people who are wrestling with ideas and emotions and really wanting, they're on journeys home. They're not sitting on their hands while while the walls crumble around them, they are doing some really deep and painful questioning, including the kids. And they don't come up with equally healthy or satisfying answers.
We just had Joyce Carol Oates on our program, and your name came up, not surprisingly. And you're at Princeton. You're taking a very eclectic course load, one of those being creative writing with Joyce Carol Oates. What was it like for you when she pulls you aside and says, this is good?
It was very, very special, for the obvious reason. This great American author was saying something nice, but also because it just before, until she had said that, I don't know if it had occurred to me that there was anything to like, mm-hmm. you know, that I just thought I wrote little stories that were assignments and they were read and they were thrown away and they were more or less indistinguishable from the others. And, but she made me feel like what I was doing was accumulating to something and was taking a shape that was my own and not anybody else's. That I had a sensibility, that I had an energy that was particular to me. And that was really revelatory.
When you look at it now of the relationship of what is it like to have, is mentor too strong a word? Is that an accurate term?
For what she was in my life?
Yes.
No, it's a perfect word.
And what does that afford you? What does that give you, do you think?
Well, it gives you a couple of things. It gives you, in that case, lessons. I mean, she was very explicit in her saying, you know, you should be reading this, you should be thinking about that, have you ever tried to write this? Very like a firm guiding hand. But more than that, I think the feeling of it mattering. You know, you matter to somebody else and suddenly you matter to yourself. At least at that age, I don't think I could have self-generated the feeling of mattering.
Really?
Yeah.
You feel you matter more now?
I mean, I think as you become an adult,
yes.
I think when you're in your early 20s or your late teens, you question what your value is in the world. You don't have lots of reference. You don't have experience. You don't have failures and successes. You're just entering everything. And to have somebody say, you're good at this thing, it just never would have. I needed her to say that in order to even sort of entertain the question of, is this something I might have some talent with?
Heard you talk about this book. You had a great quote, which was, the person who wrote this book will never write another book. That's cool.
Well, it doesn't always feel cool. It's the kind of voice in my head when I write, you know, that you're not going to write another book. And obviously, I will. I expect that I will. But I mean, and that's in the sense of, you know, as you quoted, the person writing this book won't write another book. When I look back at my previous novels, I know that I wrote them, or at least I know that I bear a closer relationship to the person who wrote them than anybody else does, but I don't feel like that person. You know, I've just changed so much. I wouldn't write those books now. I'm glad I wrote them as I did. I'm proud of them, but I now have a whole different way of looking at things and expressing things, and I assume that the distance between the person I was then and I am now will be at least as great between the person I am now and the person who will write my next book or the book after.
Jonathan Safran Foer's new book is Here I Am and is published by FSG. Thank you so much for sharing with us. A great pleasure.
Thank you. Pleasure was mine.
Thank you. We enjoy hearing from our listeners about our shows. You can email us at book@wamc.org. And you can listen again to this or find past book shows at wamc.org or subscribe to our podcast. This program was recorded at the Yiddish Book Center in Amherst, Massachusetts, yiddishbookcenter.org. Sarah LeDuc produces our program. Bookmark us for next week. And thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.